Good evening and welcome to this evening's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting and study session for February 13th, 2018. The time right now is 7:02 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present in establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hanford, and Camp.
Thank you. And we did hear earlier today from Councilmember Rasmussen that he would not be here this evening, and also from Councilmember Gamble. And without objection, the council will go ahead and consider both of them as being excused absences. And as for Councilmember Davis, we haven't heard from him this evening, so we'll go ahead and announce for the record when he enters chambers. And the first item we have on the agenda this evening is a Pledge of Allegiance being led by Cub Scout PAC 148. That Councilmember Camp organized this evening. So, PAC 148.
Audience, please rise. That salute is not in uniform. Please place your right hand over your heart. Color guard advance. Remember, you come forward. You first. Color guard fold. Please cross the colors. Color guard, pose the colors. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Color guard retreat. Guys, you get up.
Hey, don't be that big.
Don't be like that.
Color guard dismissed. Scout Eddie.
Good job.
Great job. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Well, I think with that, I'll entertain an adjournment. We can't get much further than that.
Careful.
Careful to ask for you, might get.
The next item, first, thank you very much to Cub Scout PAC 148 for our flag ceremony this evening. We're going to go ahead and move on to announcements and presentations. This is AB 18-036, presentation, Monroe Chamber of Commerce quarterly report. Come on up, Yvonne. Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
They're about to cheat sheets and stuff for 2018.
Well, good evening. Thank you for having me. First and foremost, I want to say thank you very much for letting me come up and speak. And I also want to say thank you for your support once again for granting us the LTAC funding and let's go forward into 2018 with that kind of support. It means a lot. So our 2017 quarter report, we put in 354 hours in the visitor center, 8 hours preparing for 2018 events. And that's just for Q1, some of Q2, and then 5 hours of workshops and training, and then 64 hours in special events, marketing, actually attending different events in Q4.
We attended the Zombie Run, the Harvest Festival, a couple of Halloween events. We helped market our craft brewing events. So we have three craft beverage brewing businesses in town, and we help promote that to locals and residents and guests. And you guys can't see any of that in the paperwork that I gave you, because I gave you the paperwork report. Sorry. And then we also helped market some holiday events, some craft events, Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, and Christmas events. And so that's part of that 67-68 hours. And we also hired a new operations manager, so she started on Monday. She comes already very, very well incorporated into the community. She works, she does some crafting and different events in Camp 1923, and then she also does a few other major events like the Drunk in the or the Great Drunk Hunt. In fact, she's helping us get a table there so we can host a booth and be able to promote the city and do things throughout the city. And then the cheat sheet that you guys do have in front of you is the state of address overview. We have two. You have the state of address overview, and then you also have the 2018 calendar of events. And then the postcard is just a small, something that we kind of threw together so that we can start giving it out and passing out and promoting some of our major events and some of the tourism-based events that we also work on. And we also have a couple of new board members on our board. Our president is Mike Buse, our secretary is Lisa Caldwell, our treasurer is Pam Baker, Adam Burns, Delma, Kathleen, and Adrian are members at large. We also have brought back the ambassador program, so we are not just, we're depending solely on our board, we are growing our ambassador program, and we have Patty from Wellbeing Center, Cherokee from Wellbeing, Tony from PharmaSafe, Sue from PharmaSafe, Cara from Cara's Interior, Stephanie from Surfro, Tanya from the Monroe Y, and Kathleen is our chair ambassador. We are also working and developing our strong advocacy, so we're building stronger business relationships with Economic Alliance. I go to their advisory board meetings. I also work on with them on just promoting our other events that we do throughout the city. We also sit on the Boys and Girls Club Advisory Board. I attend the Sky Valley Recreation meetings to ensure that we're getting our events out, and that if there's any way to cross-promote with our events, and making sure we can partner together with Sky Valley Chamber of Commerce. We help put on and promote the Countywide Chamber Mega Mixers, so that also brings hopefully new businesses to see what we have in Monroe. We're hosting one. In that little postcard it says July, but it got moved to October, so we're taking the third quarter. And so that is a big one, and I'm really excited about it because it brings in about 100 people, the different businesses, so hopefully it's a great way to highlight what we have here in Monroe and maybe even get somebody to expand here. We also work and sit with, we're starting a Latina Entrepreneur Network, so helping to grow and kind of break into that Hispanic community that we are, you know, have tried to and want to help develop and grow and network with. So we're working on that, and that's a monthly meeting that we're putting together, and it's at the library. I'm also working with the library to try to develop more business workshops and more networking opportunities for our businesses to kind of show some more value. As we sit and talk about different ways to expand and retain our businesses, it's also a great way to show them that we're here to support them in any other way that we can, and we're just not trying to get them to stay here or be here, but stay here and grow with us. We also are working on more networking events, again, trying to develop our business or professional development. And then some major events that we put on last year or that we partnered or worked with was the Chili Bowl, and we did that again, and that was an event that we did with the Boys and Girls Club, the Monroe Community Center, and Sky Valley Food Bank. and we got about 16 businesses and 150 people attended. This year we had 17 businesses, and it was pretty cool because we had about three of them that hadn't been in there before, and it definitely grew. And it was interesting because last year we started at the same time, but it took about half an hour for people to show up. We got kind of scared thinking nobody was going to come, and this year everybody was there before the doors even opened, and it was really cool and people were excited. And it was a lot of fun, and it was a great fundraiser for all four organizations. And so it wasn't as exciting as last year. People went last year. Sam and Mike kind of went into a bidding war. This year it didn't kind of get that crazy, but it was still a lot of fun, and we still raised a lot of money. The Monroe Fair Days, that we're, of course, still doing that. We're going to do our Monroe Fair Days Parade. September 27th is the event. Last year we had about 61 businesses participated, and we estimated about 9,000 people attended. And it's just a great opportunity to showcase the businesses that we have to people who are coming to enjoy the fair and might not otherwise see it. And so now this is a great way to show off our town. Light Up Monroe was huge. It was a great example of how we partnered with a local business. Windermere Monroe really stepped up and did an amazing job of spearheading the fundraising efforts to get the tree lit. It was a lot of work for them, and they pulled it off. And all of the five businesses that contributed or were part of that made the event so much better. And if you were able to attend, it really, the tree looked really cool. We had carolers, we had fire pits in the street, and it's just going to keep growing. We had probably about 200, 250 people there. You couldn't see all of them because some of them were back there behind the, you know, back by the tree, and all of them from the bottom, but it was just awesome, and people were just really enjoying themselves and getting to see that and bring that here again. So we're going to do it again. Hopefully this time we get more than three people to participate in the light parade. And so I'm going to have to do better job marketing that. But the light parade will definitely be something fun. It'll take some time to grow, but it'll be cool. And it's going to be a fun event. Music in the park, still working on that. We got four Fridays in July. We average about 250 people per concert, doing the beer gardens again. Once again, trying to showcase the businesses that we have, making sure people see who we have available for them, and trying to keep them here in Monroe on the weekends. Don't get stuck in traffic. Just hang out here. We have a great venue, and we want to show it off. Quirks and Cakes, great partnership with the YMCA. Lots of fun. It's a great block party. It's going to grow. It is growing. And we shut down the street, bring in about 15 different participants from breweries, wineries, meaderies, and cideries. I have a kombucha place now that wants to even participate. So for those non-alcoholic drinkers, it'll be something different as well. So that'll grow. It is growing. And it'll be really cool. And it's something that people can walk to and don't have to feel like they have to drive. And the bonus to this event is we partnered with the Y, and the Y will help us with childcare. And so that's a little bit more unique from other events that we don't always partner very well in showing that off. And then on the calendar of events, you'll see different events this year too, like date nights, trying to push and promote ideas of where to go. So I want to work with businesses and really be able to say, you know, these three businesses for date night will have some kind of promotion and drop off your kids at the Y. It happened, we tried to partner it on the third Saturday so that it would be in conjunction with the kids' date night out at the Y. And making sure that we are showing different things that you can do for fun and places to eat. I mean, even as simple as maybe going to the park and just hanging out and barbecuing. We also are trying to promote our Takeout Thursdays, and that, again, is just showing off kind of a mob squad kind of showing up on Wednesday, maybe doing a video of different restaurants that we have in town and then highlighting them so that people have an idea of what to go eat on Thursday. What else do I have for you? I think that's it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Yes, so I do have two questions right now. Councilmember Scarborough.
Do these go out to the general public in Monroe?
Yes. In fact, we have some throughout the different businesses, and we are also putting them, we partnered with Windermere to do our residential, so they give us a list of all new residents that have moved into the city, and we send out about 50, depending on the month, it's about 50 new resident packets, and then we work with the city, and we get new business packets going, and so those are included in there as well.
Okay, thank you.
And before we continue, please let the record show that Councilmember Davis entered chambers at 7:05. Good evening. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. You know, thank you so much, Yvonne, for all your work. All that you do for our community. Unfortunately, because of my schedule, a lot of times I'm not able to attend these events, but I have tried to attend the ones I can, and when I can make it, I always love seeing everyone. Appreciate your work.
Thank you.
And this is great. I'm getting a couple dates in my phone right now. I'm like, ooh, I gotta hit this up. So.
Well, they're trying to grow the calendar on the Chamber website too, because I really want ChooseMonroe.com to be the place that people will see the calendar of events. And we keep promoting it to businesses as well. It's not a chamber based calendar, it's for everybody, anybody that's doing any kind of event. So
good.
ChooseMonroe.com.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilmember Cutterback.
Yes, I want to echo that. This is just great, and I love seeing the events like the whole year, kind of the highlighted events. And I also really appreciate how you have drawn in nonprofits and businesses to kind of partner together to showcase each other. So I think that's really important for our community, and it sets us apart. So thank you.
Anything further, Council? Yvonne, thank you so much, and
thank
your board and all of our volunteers also on our behalf.
Thank you, I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Yeah,
you too.
Bye-bye. Next item that we have on our agenda this evening is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial decision that is subject to a public hearing. People who have signed up or would like to come forward to speak have 3 minutes to speak, and nobody has signed in. Is there anybody that would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Anybody at all? All right, we're going to move on to Councilmember reports. Does anybody have a Councilmember report? Okay, seeing none, staff and department reports. We don't have any in here. Are there any staff members that would like to give a report this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and move on to mayor and administrative reports. So, Ms. Knight.
The only item I have is just a note for the agenda for our next meeting. You can see that the February 20th meeting, the second, is to be a busy one. So I will just point you to, if you have any questions for staff, feel free to reach out prior to the meeting and get those questions answered.
Any questions for Ms. Knight? We also have a legislative update in your packets there. Do we have anything to point out on the legislative update?
Nothing other than our bill on the parks issue has made the first cut and potentially will be heading towards the health board for both this evening. So just to keep posted on that.
Excellent. Councilmember Kent?
Thank you. I did forget. excuse me. I just wanted to make sure that the police department is aware that the scouts and I really appreciate taking the time to give them a tour and doing everything they do to impress the kids. They have a really good time.
Awesome. Thank you. Anything further?
That's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Sounds good. All right. All right. I know what I was thinking. So we do have this week on Thursday night the Vision 2050 or something that the county is putting on. And so I think a couple of council members and I will be there. Who from here was going, just so that I can remember? Nobody.
Do you have the specs?
5:30 on Thursday.
Where?
At the Everett Transit Center.
Okay. Is there a website?
Staff can get you the information. I think we might have a registration period that we just need to make certain that we can still register people for. I had thought that a couple of council members said that they were going to go, which is why I was inquiring.
I don't remember hearing about it, but that's okay.
Okay. Sounds good. What we'll do is we'll check to see if there's still room for registration. We'll send a link out to council as well. That's Thursday night. Councilmember Cutterback.
Sorry, I didn't press my button. I might be able to go if there's still time to register. I'm coming back from Olympia that day, but I think I'll be back by 3 or 4.
Okay. This is over the next year or so, there are going to be a number of outreach activities, opportunities for feedback from state and local, including county partners, about about how to accommodate growth, which then drives into things like transportation improvements and things like that. And I know that 2025 is quite a ways out there, but it affects how planning and how grants and how infrastructure gets funded and whatnot for some time. So it's important for us as policymakers to make these meetings and give input. So anyway, we will continue to make you aware of those as they come open, and I would encourage council to attend those meetings so that we're heard out here in Monroe. Anything further? Please take a look at Monroe this week. There are a number of items that were identified in there. I won't belabor those right now. We do have some discussion items. Does anybody else have any questions before we move down to the floor for our to continue our meeting down on the floor? Okay, seeing none, let's go ahead and recess for about a minute or two, and we'll meet down on the floor.
Thank you, everybody. See you. Okay, we're going to go ahead and reconvene. We are now moving on to discussion item number one. This is AB 18-037, discussion, Unified Development Regulations Project Update. We have Mr. Swanson who will be presenting this evening. This is a joint meeting of our Planning Commission and City Council. One of the things that we do in this format, when you would like to be recognized to speak, if you do me a favor and just put your name tag tent up like this, what I'll do is I'll look around every once in a while and just make certain that I've got everybody that would like to speak. When you're called upon, if you could do me a favor, put the tent back down, that will make sure that I come back and ask you again if you have something else to say. Okay. All right. Mr. Swanson.
Thank you. So, in addition to your packets, just before the meeting started, two additional maps were handed out and placed on the desk. And so, we'll discuss those later. We just wanted to make you aware of those. And so, one of the few reasons why I requested to have this joint workshop is we're, as you know from a few months back, we're embarking on essentially consolidating all the development regulations in one chapter, which is a huge task. Most of those are our current code as it deals with development. We're getting rid of it and we're starting from scratch. There are a few things in there that we can salvage, that some minor modifications, some recent code updates that we can reuse again. But for a large part, we are starting from scratch. So it's a very, very big project. It coincides with the completion of the comprehensive plan. And so in order to implement that comprehensive plan, our code has to reflect that the recently adopted 2015 comprehensive plan. In addition to that, our zoning code really hasn't been gone over since 1980s, I would say. There's still a lot of old outdated references. As you know, I've brought several code cleanups before you for approval, just to get rid of some of those irregularities in the code. So this time around, we're working on developing a uniform code. Yeah, so with that, we started out with planning, working with the Planning Commission on it. I put these workshops at about three of them every couple of months, and I just wanted it to check back in, and I wanted the Planning Commission to be able to be in the same room as Council and talk back and forth about potentially any issues that come up, questions that they have, and so everyone's face-to-face, and I thought it would be more in-depth than me just standing in front of Council and giving an update so you could actually hear it from the Commission, who's been extremely involved. As staff, we've been very fortunate to work with a group like this because they are very proactive. They ask a lot of questions, and they're not afraid to make it their code, which is very beneficial from a staff level. I've worked with commissions in the past where they've been very quiet, they haven't said anything, and you really don't get the true code out of it. So they've been very involved throughout the process. So again, this is just going to be a high-level overview. I know your packets have a lot of draft code in it. That was to essentially just give you an idea of what we're doing. We're not looking for feedback on individual uses in these areas, but I wanted to note our new format that we've gone to under our existing code. We have Title 18, which contains the majority of the land uses and zones, and those things are essentially pulled together in various tables and spread throughout this chapter. And what we're proposing now is to take these new zones and essentially make them individual chapters within the code. And so this does a couple different things. Is by making an individual chapter, if I want to do something in a residential, low density residential zone, the bulk of what I want to do is in that individual chapter. And from a staff side, it makes it much easier when we need to do an amendment, because the bulk of our amendment will be in that individual chapter instead of spread throughout multiple different pages. And so that was the purpose behind this current organization of the code. And so with that, we'll go over a little bit of the work that we completed. We've got through the majority of the zones. We're still essentially doing what's called a buildable lands report. We're going through and doing analysis of existing and usable land, which is key when we're developing these zones, because we do have growth targets that are assigned to us by Puget Sound Regional Council that we have to hit. Under our current comp plan that was adopted, it showed us at a deficit of a little over 200 homes for our future buildable lands capacity. And so what we're attempting to do this time is match up our zoning and close that gap. And so we're essentially, with newly implemented zone, we'll be able to reach our targets. And I understand it's not an exact science. There, you know, we're doing the best we can. Chan's been doing an outstanding job going through and actually trying to ground-proof these parcels as much as possible for the actual, if they will redevelop or not, as opposed to taking a 20-acre chunk that's vacant and 90% of this wetland, and there's no possibility of redeveloping it. We're actually going through and trying to ground-proof that and get a real number out of it. And so so those are the big ones. And as we go through this process, we have different citizens or business owners coming in and talking at the meeting. So from the very start, what we did is we started compiling everybody's emails. And so anybody that comes in, we ask for their email, and we put it on a list. So anytime we send something to the Planning Commission and it goes out, whether it's be a schedule of our future code updates, what we're talking about, our packets, they get a copy of that. So anybody who comes in is automatically put on that mailing list. And so we have a fairly good email list that this goes out to, and we've been getting some good response. And this kind of leads into our future chapters, and what we're working on is, no matter what project you work on, if you're building a cabinet or rewriting code, you always run into an issue that you didn't expect. And one of those things that has come up is the light industrial zone. And so we had, I would say, approximately 10 business owners come from the light industrial zone come and testify that they're concerned with what we're going to do with it. Because right now, our under our current zoning code, our commercial zone and our light industrial zone, there's not much difference. I mean, it's essentially, it's allowed uses that are the same zone. And as Planning Commission has gone through this review and is taking a look at it, it's very helpful, because most of the people that are on Planning Commission were on for the conference plan update. So they remember it, they know that it's fresh in their head, and they're going back to that comp plan, looking at the intent of that zone, and then applying these future or these proposed zones to it. And so they're trying to follow, or they're following it as closely as possible, but you come into these things where a light industrial zone, you have some breweries that are over there, you have some retail that's over there that truly doesn't fit a manufacturing use. And so that group came along and had some questions about how is this going to impact my property? I own a restaurant or a brewery in that area. And so Planning Commission's and staff have been working on various potential solutions to the problem. One of those, you'll see a map that was handed out. One of them is directly out of the comprehensive plan map. The other one shows two potential zones. And so with this, we tried to essentially take areas of one idea was potentially we'd create two zones in the light industrial area. Of the two options, you'll see that I believe the area is pink. Of option one is potentially, could this area be something that supports both retail and a light industrial use? And then the second one you see in the lower right-hand corner where it increases that area, that captures a few more businesses that fall into that restaurant category, that other than manufacturing category. And so this is one of those things that's coming up right now of, if we want to move forward and we're looking at the comp plan, I mean, the big thing that the comp plan shows is this is an industrial zone. This is for, you know, manufacturing, this is for storage and those kind of things. It does not mention, like in the commercial zone, has a heavy tone on retail. This area does not, but it's something that has come up, which also leads to some bigger questions, because we have breweries over there. And some bigger questions about, you know, they had interest in pulling in other smaller breweries in that area, and should we create and push for a zone that accommodates those kind of breweries. And so this is just one of a few items, and these are just bullet points I put up here for some talking points for Planning Commission and Council to discuss and give any feedback on. And so these are kind of the things that we would like to hash out at this stage, and then so we go back and develop it, it's not catching anyone off guard when it gets Council.
So, Commissioner Tuttle? Commissioner Tuttle, you're the Chair of the Planning Commission. Would you like to share your thoughts?
I would, actually. We have one brewery that I know of over there, right, Dreadnought, and then Harry's. So that is an area that we would like to have some direction as far as what the Council would like to see. We have some opinions on the Planning Commission about what it should look like. We haven't actually gone over slicing off these two areas yet, but there are two options. I was talking to Deborah today and sharing that I had met with the new manager of the theater, and she was saying that the Woodinville Theater is their biggest competitor, and we kind of went back and forth about why that might be, and she was confused. I don't think that the Woodinville Theater is I don't think that the Woodinville Theater is more desirable necessarily than our theater, but I think that people are going to Woodinville for other reasons and then ending up at the theater there. And as we talked more about that, Woodinville does have quite an array of restaurants, and also they have kind of a brewery winery district. So a couple things to consider and that we would like to hear from you on do we have enough industrial space for the industrial businesses that want to be in those areas? The industrial businesses do provide jobs, and so we don't want to push them out or make it so that there's no place for those businesses to expand. However, we do have two pretty good sized beer, wine, tasting, brewery kind of places over there. That one, we don't want to push them out. They're trying to build, and they're both very young. And two, maybe that is an appropriate area to create a Woodinville type of wine and brewery, tasting, alcohol area. It looks like option number two is the one that takes Harry and Dreadnought into account, correct? All right, so then the other one, the option number one, is kind of where we started before I started thinking about the theater and trying to create an industrial area over there. The owners of Dreadnought are constantly comparing that area to the Woodinville area, so...
Snohomish,
yeah, but not as well. Yeah, North Snohomish.
They were saying, the craft beers and things.
Yeah. But the first thing that came up for us is the Paisanos, Partner Madness, Teriyaki, the Nail Salon. What else is over there? The martial arts place, and I think there's a vet. That's already built into sort of a strip mall, and in the industrial zoning district, those uses are not allowed. So what would happen is, if one of those places went out of business, a new similar business would not be able to go in unless we create some sort of a frontage area on Fryland. So the goal is not to build that whole area up into a little mini store strip mall area, but maybe just to conserve what's already been established there, and it is apparently working there. The businesses and a lot of the homes on that end of town do use that frequently, so instead of having it be legal non-conforming, we'd like to just hopefully see that be allowed as a use. But we do need some input on where the council would like us to go on that, because it would be kind of a big change. So we are looking at slicing off just that front, or maybe slicing off just that front plus where Harry's, to encompass Harry's interest, and make those allowable uses in there. So that would be the first questions on the correct industrial zone or in the light industrial zone. I don't know if that needs to go on one of your agendas or if that's what we talked about tonight.
I think we've got a couple of folks who would like to talk.
Oh, okay.
But before we do that, are there any other planning commissioners who would like to give insight into this?
I've covered it pretty well.
Perfect. So I'm saying, and again, planning commissioners, commissioners, you can go ahead and put your tags up also. We would like to speak, but I just want to make certain that before we start asking questions, we've had an opportunity to hear from everybody on this. So we'll go ahead and we'll start off with Councilmember Cutback. Councilmember Cutback.
So Ben, can you explain to me the difference between the two zones? I mean, if you're in the craft industrial, does that look for you from being light industrial and vice versa?
No. Okay. Essentially, the way we start talking about this, and again, this is either, we just wanted a talking point, so this isn't absolutely in stone, but a direction to go on it, or just some feedback so we can develop the thought a little more when we get back to Planning Commission. And these were just a couple initial thoughts that we had in some previous meetings. So in that, the first iteration you see, the one in the upper left-hand right. corner, that one, essentially what it would do is allow everything that's allowed in the light industrial zone and then some retail or service.
Okay.
So it would be in addition to.
Okay. So we wouldn't be limiting the light industrial from expanding into that area, because I think that was a question, or maybe that's what
it could if that area filled up with those uses, then we may be taking real estate away from industrial.
Okay.
But that would be a supply and demand issue. And also, we have not defined craft industrial yet. We don't have allowable uses. There's not even a definition for that area yet. We just started talking about it, but we didn't know if we should move forward in defining and refining that, if that was an absolute no-go from the council.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, and Sheriff Tuttle brought up a very, very important point that we had discussed is, you know, this is an employment zone. And so, you know, and there's only so much of that land for someone to come and expand, say, a, you know, manufacturing facility.
Right.
And so we want to be very careful, you know, how we move forward with it and not, you know, give it away to something with a, you know, low employment rate, or we, you know, hurt an existing business who wants to expand and wants to stay here, and now we're taking up that land. So it's a very delicate balance.
Okay. All right. So, not knowing what the definition of craft industrial or what restrictions would be in place, I think it's important moving forward that we have businesses already in that area who are developing, who are growing, who have been here, and I think who want to continue here, and I think we need to make sure that we respect that as we look at defining this and moving forward. So, because currently right now, the light industrial covers those craft, and it all works right now.
Right now, it kind of goes back to the, you know, our general commercial and our industrial essentially are allowing the same things.
Right.
And so there's no focus. You know, we have some medium-sized box stores located in the light industrial area that probably should be focused more in our commercial area.
So more retail commercial. So what you're hoping is that by defining this more, when they move out, you wouldn't allow that same box retail to move in. You would encourage it to go to Kelsey or somewhere else.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, focusing those businesses around the actual
manufacturing,
yeah,
industrial,
and then the retail around the retail centers and so on and so forth. But like you said, we have some established businesses in there, and just to cover, I know I talked about it a while back, but with if we change the zoning code and say it no longer allowed a use that's currently operating down there, that doesn't kick them out. It essentially puts them in that legal non-conforming status. But if they ever want to expand, then they can't.
Oh, and then if they leave, that use can't be there anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. So just initially, my thoughts, not knowing definitions or anything like that, I would say that if we're moving in a direction of really defining light industrial and kind of making retail and commercial different in a different part of the city,
We would want to look at defining something in there that allows restaurants, craft breweries, those type of things, especially in conjunction close to the lake. And I think that could be an area that really could develop. And as we're looking at developing Lake Tide more and having that be walkable and just a, you know, a more use, it's already very popular, but making improvements there, I think that would be a good time.
Thank you. Councilor Scarborough.
I think Cassie's hit on most of the questions, but let me rephrase so I understand. We're basically trying to, because on a comprehensive plan, we only have the gray area, which is commercial. And we have the pink area that has the restaurants and some of those things that we're talking about expanding in option two, so there can be more winery type things or eateries, that sort of thing. Is that correct?
You know, something something I didn't say was hitting on what Ben said. Right now the commercial and the industrial have a lot of similar uses. So in breaking that up and making the industrial and the commercial, it does cause some of these areas to become legal non-conforming. So it's not that they're already allowable and we're trying to do something different. It's just they're going to be not allowed. And so in response to these businesses coming in and testifying, that is why we ended up coming up with these options, because we didn't. They recognize that there's a symbiotic nature between more breweries, more wineries, will help them be successful, so they also like to not be islands out there in that industrial area as legal non-conforming uses. Does that make sense?
Yes, and that's a great idea too. I just, like Ms. Scott, I want to ensure that the, where you have labeled this craft industrial, where the eateries are now, mm-hmm. the hamburger place,
they're marked on here, so yeah. You can see that too.
That there's still those places for people who work in the industrial area to go for lunch, or the people that are utilizing Muay Thai, have a place that's close,
correct.
That they can have some place to go to. I think those things are too.
Thank you.
Anything further, Councilmember?
Not right now.
Okay. Councilmember Hanford,
I concur.
Thank you, Councilmember Hanford. Thank you, Councilmember Kent.
I just want to make sure I was clear from Councilmember Fedek's comments. So, is there like a natural development in the area that's being ignored? You've got access to Lake Tide, you have, like I said, industrial, you have some restaurants, breweries, that kind of thing. But you're going to set it up so that they're non-conforming, and in the event that they close, the next business that goes in will not have.
No, the opposite.
Oh, it's the opposite?
Yeah.
Okay, so that wouldn't be allowed going forward. So a new business that would come in, and like you said, is going to go, a new brewery that's going to go next to an existing one, that would be allowed.
Yes.
Okay. So I had it backwards.
It depending on the option where you have the narrower and the larger, you know, the more space we would zone for.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilman Davis.
Oh, if you have an add-on, then that's all.
Well, just one add-on.
Okay.
But in the case of retail,
mm-hmm.
it would be the other way. They left, if there was a little box store there, right?
Or a big box store.
Or a big box store, whatever. That would not be industrial, that would be phased out, correct?
It's depending on, we haven't fully developed that opportunity.
Yeah.
I would be pushing that more towards the commercial area anyway.
Okay, I'm just concerned about, like, some natural progression. If it's the spot is really conducive to whatever business is there and it's growing, going to make every effort not to crush that, just to have it open up a retail store in a retail authorized area, as opposed to, you know, some people want to walk down the lake and then go shopping.
Well, and that is part of the direction. So because we haven't defined craft industrial yet,
okay.
If the council chooses to stretch that area all the way over to where the big box store is,
mm-hmm.
Then that would be direction from the council.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
Councilor Davis.
Well, I immediately liked option one.
lot of it has to do with what Councilman Kovacs said. You've got that buffer between the lake and the industrial park there. And we really do want to improve the lake. It's just the look, the overall look of that. You know? And I think those businesses work on that strip there because they fit with that idea. They're also kind of a buffer on the housing side, too, as you move into the industrial area. And so I like that right away, but select option two, because not only is that the boulevard important and all like that, how it looks, that whole corner out there is kind of unique in itself as part of the industrial. It's got a different feel, and also as you go deeper in, you get much more commercial and industrial. And so, yeah, I look at that and go, well, okay, that best of both worlds, that is. You know, what can we do to, encourage those kinds of businesses that work, and also to protect that corridor there and the businesses there. So yeah, I look at that. It's interesting. How can we do that? Not that you have to answer that question. Just go ahead.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. Well, I have a question, Ben, too. In option one, it's just that little strip. In option two, we're coming back to the main areas and Dreadnought, but we're also getting that across the street from Thai. Is there a reason why that turned pink?
No, there isn't. And this was a map that was, I think, done in 5 minutes, yeah, just for discussion purposes. So, it's other stuff we could get out of.
So maybe if the council does want us to pursue the craft industrial definition and things like that, we could also learn from you specifically which areas. If you want it to go across Thai Street, if you want it to just end at Harry's or go further back, I would like to absolutely consider the, I would like to hear if we think we have enough industrial space or if we're pushing any industry out by letting the restaurant and the brewery area come in too. We just don't want to have a situation where we spend a bunch of time on something and then there's a misunderstanding on what was wanted.
Okay. Commissioner Sander, did you have something?
No, that was covered.
Okay. before we go back to that, a couple of things that go through my mind that just to think about. First, for me, the option one makes a high degree of sense. Everybody said, you've got the proximity to the lake, you also have the Frylands on the other side of Highway 2 up Roosevelt, people living in that area, and having places where people can go to get food and to find entertainment and whatnot is a positive thing on this side of town. One of the concerns I have is the potential loss of larger lots that could be used or are currently being used for industrial space. So this is without considering the businesses that are in there right now, and I think we've got a couple vacant lots. When I'm looking at that center block that is included in option two, I'm seeing those larger lots there and thinking, okay, if we want to have industrial uses, we need to kind of think about protecting those larger lots so that we can continue to have larger manufacturing uses and things like that. That's one of the things I'm thinking about is what is the opportunity cost if these lots get subdivided into smaller lots and we end up losing the manufacturing, the manufacturing that we do have here, or at least the opportunity. So that was one of the things that went through my mind. The on the south side of 146 makes sense to me when we go from option one to option two, because you do have that buffer or that apparent buffer from the residential area, and I know that there's a trail on the south side of that that people like to walk, so it provides that nice potential interaction in the future with people walking down the trail at nighttime and being able to go to maybe the what is currently the back side of these lots to to go to shops and things like that. So for me, it's almost like there's a natural L that I see that makes sense. It's that block in the center that makes me scratch my head, and then as Chair Tuttle pointed out, the north side of Lake Tai. The only thing that I see there is sort of the synergy, the potential synergy between the YMCA, which is a community gathering place, and maybe the first couple lots adjacent to that. Again, I'm not thinking through what is there today, but what might be there in the future, you might get some synergy with some sort of a node there. And then the last thing that kind of goes through my head is compatible uses. So if we're going to be allowing more craft industrial, if we end up with more restaurants and everything, just making certain the larger traffic that is, shipping traffic might be taking things out of the industrial lots that are internal, and how that interacts with people driving to and from places that are, that are food and shopping and whatnot in those internal lots. That's just part of what goes through my head, is to make sure that we have compatible uses, not just for transportation, but for noise and vibration and hours of use and parking and things like that. And I'll just add one more. Do we have any data that would support a policy decision one way or another for these?
As far as like a land capacity?
Either that or an economic analysis that would support one direction or another for like that seven block?
No, not with the current ones that we have. There isn't anything one way or the other right now.
So those are just some things that, again, this council's decision, planning commission's place to make a recommendation, but these are just some of the things that run through my head as somebody that used to be planning once upon a long time ago. So we're going to go ahead and go back to taking tags. So Council Member Scarborough, you're next.
And option number two, can we encompass Canyon Creek in there as part of the craft industrial?
Does it go all the way to Canyon Creek, Ben?
So it looks like it does. Doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, I don't think we don't want them to be in craft industrial. Right? Mm-hmm.
I think my understanding is that the light industrial, it would allow everything that's light industrial, and then just whatever section we choose to craft industrial would also include these other uses. So you wouldn't be taking away the opportunity for an industrial business to go in there. You would just be allowing the opportunity for another brewery or a distillery or something else.
But weren't we also disallowing growth by having it be pink? So if the casting place wanted to grow, we would have to either make an exception or we have to say
no. No, they would still be able to. Okay. What's there would be allowed, and then in this area we would also allow some other things. Yeah, but what's already there could go where it wants to go. I think that's
my understanding. And I concur with Mayor's thoughts on some of the bigger lots having the potential for bigger industrial things. So also the L that we speak of down 146 sound reasonable. I can see Harry wanting a neighbor for another brewery, and people have a couple places to go when they come to town. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Hamper.
Thank you. So I like the questions you brought. I'm trying to think practically what all is there, because I think we all like the idea of keeping them closer to the lake, as opposed to maybe deep into the industrial area. But I'm looking on remembering what's along the lake, and I'm thinking, I don't remember very many empty spaces for those. So that kind of means they have to be back at least some ways into this, and I'm trying to think of what all is there besides, you know, the Canyon Creek takes up a huge chunk of that, but how many other empty spaces are there? And I remember one lot space kind of behind Harry's, behind the AMT or that building, but I don't remember a whole lot of empty lots, so I'm just curious.
One of the things that Ms. Knight pointed out to me is we can certainly get a map of the prints illustrated there and we can identify what's there. Also from a data-driven standpoint, you know, sometimes it's helpful to have data to drive the policy choices that we make. Ms. Knight, do you want to go ahead and hit on the community attributes?
Right. So one of the firms that we had interviewed for the business recruitment and retention and expansion work that we're going to be proposing to council next week and discuss with the finance committee today does this type of economic analysis around industrial space or retail space and might be able to answer some of these questions about what is the demand for this space currently and how is this area actually meeting that demand. And that might help inform your decision about how much space you might want to set aside for craft, brewery, and the industrial craft work. But I understand from what Commissioner Tuttle has suggested is that it wouldn't limit industrial uses, other industrial uses, it just would allow the craft uses to be added on top of that. So from that perspective, you're not saying that you couldn't have that use. I think the other thing to consider too, and maybe you discussed this already at your planning commission meetings, is that any retail use that you allow in this space, and I appreciate the fact that the council's thinking about use around the Lake Tye specifically, but then it limits then the demand for that space in the other areas of your community where you've already zoned retail. So just think of this as a competing area for retail.
Right.
And so if you're thinking about, you know, wanting to focus on retail in specific zones, just remember that this kind of pulls away from that a little bit. And maybe that's not a bad thing. Maybe you have a separate district that this becomes that retail district along the lake. And I can certainly envision, you know, what that might look like in 20 years or so. But just some of the things to consider.
And I will agree, living on the west side of town, that if I don't have to hop on Highway 2 to go to Fred Meyer and get a gallon of milk or something, I think it would be nice to have a grocery store on the west side of town or on the other side of 522 where the high school is, just outside city limits right now. So, yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, so Councilmember Hanford, you still have the floor?
Doesn't the fire department own
at the end of the meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, where that is.
Okay. That whole square?
I think that they own, I think the fire district owns that, but it's something we can certainly check into. It's a good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the satellite map is really useful for the Google satellites because you can see that this is the
yeah. And I heard a voice from one of the officers
that says they do own that on the corner there.
Okay.
On the northeast corner.
Thank you.
1-8169.
Yes. All right, thanks. All right, we'll go back to the tents that are up. Commissioner Stanger.
Oh, my tent is down. Oh. But just, yeah, I just, along with what you said, I think where it allows what's there now, I just, from somebody that lives over on that side of town, we have to go to the other side of town for just about anything.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm not saying commercial, right? I mean, it would be nice to have some commercial over there, but I can also see them having it in one place. But it would be nice to have some things over on that side because it is difficult to go east and west. It's really difficult.
Oh, yeah.
And also, you know, restaurants and those things as well. So I would really like to see what the opportunity cost is as far as industrial goes versus maybe allowing some of the other things on that side of town. Because I don't know what the vacancy rate is in that area. I know that when I drive along Brightlands Boulevard, I see a lot of, it seems like a lot of vacant industrial. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we have more available than you know, there's more. There's more supply of us to match. But I think it is prime real estate and come up there and have to say, but somebody that lives on that side of town, it would be nice to have a few more options.
Thank you. Commissioner Jensen.
Thank you. I hope I didn't, I'm not going to say something was already covered. I'm sorry I'm late.
It's okay.
So, I seem to think when we were first talking about, when this came up, I thought it was as much about what was already there and trying to be more friendly and adapting to what's trying to go along there with the very little new restaurants and other things like that, and be supportive of what we hope to be the future of Lake Tahoe with pedestrians and foot traffic and able to just walk across the street to do something, eat or a little bit of shopping or wine tasting or whatever it be. And this is my first seeing of this alternate option too, and I'm concerned that what we're going to do is just start creep. And once you do that and stuff starts filling in, then it'll be like, well, now we need more, and you're going to start creeping farther and farther, and you would lose a lot of your industrial. Another issue I would see is that I know that previous businesses that have been in here, they moved to various other locations, had issues with signage, and that there was nothing out at Freiland's or no opportunity to put signs out at Freiland's that says, hey, turn down here for these businesses. And if you do this, suddenly we're going to end up with monument signs probably at these intersections trying to direct traffic into this other area for more retail. And I don't think that was the intent of what we're trying to do here. We're trying to have a light little area right tucked up in the way. Won't be any extra signage in those businesses and industrial stuff. They already, you know, they don't need drive-by business, so they don't need signs. So that would be my concern. I don't even see value in coming down High Street or 146 because it's just part of that creep. And I think it'll produce new problems. There's already, I think, some issues or people complaining of certain intersections and traffic. And it's one thing for industrial traffic, but you start having retail deeper in here, and you're just going to have more traffic trying to get back out onto Freiland. Now you've got a new problem to address. So I certainly like option one. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, I wasn't tracking. So, Councilor McCann.
Sure. Okay, this is going to be kind of a strange question, but I just, as I was watching the expansion of the two of your comments, if I understand correctly, the adult entertainment, whatever zoning is in this industrial area.
That's correct.
So, would it remain in the expanded option two? So, technically, some of our craft industrial businesses could be.
Okay, we just addressed that yesterday, and we're taking adult off the craft list.
Okay.
The craft industrial list.
So that one we have to be very careful with.
Option A, yeah. Option one, craft industrial.
Yeah, when we were just looking at this.
But the sexually oriented business zone or adult entertainment zone is noted as two things. We have to be careful with it because of one big reason is Monroe, and I believe maybe one or two other jurisdictions slipped in under that cutoff point to actually designate these zones.
Right.
And then everyone subsequently after it has to broadly allow these uses within their city. And so that's why you've never seen any movement with that zone.
So if it expands, if we were to go with option two, we're still going to keep
this section of the business zone and
this adult entertainment.
adult entertainment zone. So with that, and I know I'm trying to reach way back on this one, is the city had to do a lot of work to prove that we are allowing a reasonable area for these uses to go into. And I just remember a lot of Phil Ulbrich's attorney time going into that one. And so the city had to prove and show that and put a lot of effort into it. Going back and trying to revisit it now when we're already essentially vested to that law could open up a whole can of worms.
With that, I'll yield in a second. But with that mindset or that idea, what Councilor Jensen has said, or excuse me, but I didn't mean to hold Commissioner Jensen.
No, Councilor, it's a demotion.
That would be a concern because, like you said, we are faced with it. It has, and I know it has had an impact in previous businesses and in previous discussions we've had about how we want to rezone that area, and also something about the number of churches we have in the area. So I don't know if that's going to happen. I mean, hate to bring them up with those same conversation, but whether or not the churches would fall into a non-craft thing or zoning issue, that's going to be a problem. I don't know. Those are just concerns. And I don't expect it to be really, but I will yield to you.
I just want to say, I think there are two questions. So one, we just wanted to know if you want to consider a craft industrial area at all based on the businesses there. It sounds like that is kind of a yes so far. But two, they just threw these areas together. The council can say where they want the zone. So nobody had really talked about which blocks or which pieces of land. So as those concerns are all that would come when you say these are the areas where we want to see that craft industrial.
But it sounds like you're already discussing it. So
we
those are concerns.
Barely touched on it, and that's because we didn't want to move forward with it until we had some input from you all on whether it was even worth trying to define.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to include retail. It doesn't have to, you know, include really anything that we don't want it to include. That is also up to the council. They give us some direction. It could be craft. It could be just wineries, distilleries, and tasting rooms. It could be, you know, whatever you would like to see the zone be.
Got it. All right, thank you.
So, because nobody has their heart set on like option one or option two at all, we haven't even done that.
There could be option three and four.
There could be, there could be 20 options between now and then. You guys can define where
you are. You have the floor.
Thank you. That was all. That was all I wanted to say.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Scarborough?
To Steve. Everything that comes down to Tax Street or 146 already has to come out on Woodside. Why would we be concerned about anybody else being down 146 if we were creating businesses such as restaurants and that sort of thing? And or why do we care if there's signs out on Fryland Boulevard that says that these businesses are down these roads? I don't. But what is the thought process there? I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm just thinking from the retailer's standpoint, are they going to be putting standards boards out there because we don't have a sign code yet? And other things, is it just going to sort of happen? I'm not saying the city is going to try to promote it or build something. I think just the demand of retail itself is going to push in that direction of having some sort of signage.
And we as a city, would we, in my opinion, if that were so, would we not want to encourage some sort of, other than a standing sign, some sort of signage that says these things are down here and Harry's is down here? Because if people going down Fryland Boulevard, we can't let them know that those things are there. And if we put more wineries and tasting rooms down there, we'd probably want to advertise on the main thoroughfare that they're down the side road.
That's what I'm feeling was why I felt like a problem if we have to be there.
So Councilor Sterber, one of the things maybe to think about is that if you have to put signage on Frylands to attract people to your business, why would that be the case? If you have an economy of scale where you're locating where other like businesses are, you don't necessarily need to have that off-site signage like on Frylands within the right-of-way to get people to come to your business. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I'm sure I agree with you. I know many times we're driving along and we look at a shopping center sign and we look at the sign out there that says these businesses are in there. We don't have to look in there to find out what's there because we're looking for a place to eat or a specific store. So, and I'm wondering the same thing. And I know we have some restrictions on Highway 2, and we had the issue with Five Guys who wanted to put a sign out on Highway 2. Well, we can't do that. Well,
you know, if it's done nicely and it's not a sandwich sign on the grass, I can see where maybe we need to think about having the ability to say the loop is back here, and that the Goodyear is back here, and that the Five Guys is back, that the Galaxy Theaters are back here, and the same thing along Frylands Boulevard. We could say what is behind Frylands Boulevard.
Well, you'll heard me just quickly.
I'm just throwing out.
And I agree. I was thinking like the Woodville Wine District has some signs down where that street is parallel to 522. It looks industrial when you drive by it, and if you didn't know that the Wine District was there, or if you didn't see one of the signs, you wouldn't know it was there. So that's the type of idea.
It's not a sandwich sign on,
right,
on the grass.
Okay. So we're here to talk about, I'm sorry for getting into the issue of signs, that's a whole other the only reason why I shared what I did is that sometimes we have those offsite signs that indicates somebody's going to pay more money to be in a place with higher visibility, and where similarly situated businesses are. If you are located internal to this, it's just something to think about. Is that an efficient allocation of space to have a retail space that you're relying on foot traffic, as opposed to one of these industrial businesses where you're employing people? This is, you are going there to work, as opposed to trying to attract people off of Highway 2 or Frylands to come and shop there. If you've got one of these craft businesses with a restaurant component, you're on Frylands, people are going to see you when you're driving by. So the reason why I brought up what I did was not to be anti-science per se, but just to bring up the question of an efficient allocation of space. With that said, Councilmember Starrow, you still have the floor, otherwise I've got other tags.
Fair enough.
Okay, Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. So, just to rehash, you're looking for two things. Number one, what council members think of option one and two?
Do you want us to pursue a craft industrial zone at all?
And the second thing you want to know is,
if yes, where would you like it defined?
And what is craft?
Yeah.
Are you going to want that tonight?
I don't know. Do we need that tonight?
I think it's just the direction to explore the option.
Yeah. It's a big question, so you may need to, have a few months to consider it.
So, if that's what you're looking for, I like option two. I'm not sure that the everything north of High Street is really good. I think if you just take that stretch off and leave the rest of it, that's good. And just off the cuff, restaurants, retail, the brewery, winery, those types of things, that's what we call it.
Winery, distillery, craft beer.
Thanks. Well, Councilor Fisher. I'm sorry, Commissioner Fisher. Commissioner Fisher.
Actually, you put my sign on behalf of Shannon.
I just wanted to make a couple points, which actually was confirmed for the most part. But first thing, with the maps, as Ben stated, they were put together pretty quickly just for the meeting tonight. And the option one reflects what we've discussed at previous planning commission meetings for the most part. Option two is the other extreme completely. So it was anticipated that some of those parcels wouldn't make it, so just so you know. And also, Planning Commission will be reviewing the signage chapter, and there will be some changes made to that. So when we get to that, there will be an opportunity for input as to which types of signs you would like where and where off-site signs are appropriate. So that will come back.
Thank you. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. So if you're looking for the two questions, it's either two currently. The answer to the first question, I agree, is yes. I think it's a good idea. And from the description I heard, these being the two extremes, I think you're going to come out with some sort of compromise on it. I think option two is a little bit too big, and there are other concerns I have about the types of businesses that we will have to have in there, or have to allow. Option one, at a minimum, would be very good. Option two,
I think it's a little bit too big, but I think we'll come up with it. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilor Cutback.
So I'm in favor of pursuing the craft industrial and see what that looks like and looking at that. As far as the land area, I'm still hoping. I guess I would need more, more feedback from possible vendors in the community. You said 10 business owners came forward and were concerned about that, so I just wanted to hear more of their comments. I think going through the chambers on who has a connection with all the local breweries, wineries, and that whatnot, and seeing if, you know, that would be an interest for them to come in this area and expand or get businesses to be.
Okay.
More input would be needed on how to define the boundaries.
Okay. Councilor Lewis.
So, Councilmember Hanford said it earlier. My thoughts on it is that I concur.
You're getting me anxious.
All right, so to respond, then, Chair Cuddle, you've heard that we're good with the council's good with the craft industrial, and it's just a matter of coming up with something between one and two. It's kind of what it sounds like. So if you have an interest in getting some more data or something like that, certainly let our director know. So let this response know, and we can see if that's something that is that we can, you know, get to help support a policy choice. And I certainly agree with what Councilmember Cutback brought up also, which is us talking to some of the folks that are out there and following up to get that geographic space filled in.
Yeah. Thank you. So we did, before we were going to talk about the light industrial zoning, we did specifically reach out in a, what I've been saying, a push, not fetch way towards the, specifically Harry's, Dreadnought, and anybody in between, and those were the major players that came in. So I guess then the next question is, do we want to take that public comment, those people that came in and testified, do we want to specifically take them into account, or do you want to define your own? If this is too big, if option two is too big, I think option two is mainly there because of Harry's and Dreadnought, who drew the line behind those two businesses. So do we take specific businesses into account, or do we just make it a general thing, and if it makes it hard for them to continue, that's just the way it is, or have more specific public comment part of it?
What did Harry's have to say?
Well, Harry and Dreadnought were both strongly in favor of being allowed to expand and grow and have other wineries, distilleries, and breweries.
So, I'm going to interrupt really quickly. I don't know that we can necessarily draw boundaries just based on existing uses specific to businesses. So, I'm going to take a risk and suggest maybe working with our listening to the public comment we've received and thinking about what sort of policy works best for the community. And certainly, our community development director can help a little bit more. So, any council members have any concerns with that?
What was that?
Just a second, Councilor Sherman, staff, would you agree with that approach?
Absolutely. And it was you know, similar to what was echoed earlier. You know, if you have that, obviously this the concern about right along Lake Tyler, but then we also have potentially have that option of actually doing the economic study, so we have some numbers to back up and see what exactly impacts that might happen. So
we're going to listen. We're kind of waiting to hear about our economic development person, it would be Ireland, and when we, what they come up with is a need for out there. It's kind of directed.
It was one of those things where if we brought this, you know, in front of everybody and it was a cut and dry, we want to include this area, then proceeding forward with the economic analysis would, you know, we would have spun our wheels, whatever we didn't use. And so that was part of it was, you know, do you have a cut and dry? Is there a strong feeling in this room, regardless of any data we bring you, these are the boundaries you want? It doesn't sound like it's, you know, it sounds like there needs to be something over there, but there also needs to be additional data, so that's why I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And they are not for specific businesses, but specific uses that are already exist is a better way of saying, because that is why we brought it, that is why we took that first slice off to begin with, is because of existing uses that seem to be working.
Perfect.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further? All right, we're going to move to the planning commission. I don't think you're next, right? We're done.
That's
yes.
The end of
the calendar. What else do we have for the planning commission
for the meeting? Just a few more items.
Okay.
Oh, if we're getting tight, we can just.
I don't think it's anything as in-depth as.
No. I think it's a higher level review. Just one new zone that I'd like to point out here is the pink zone, which is the tourist commercial. This area actually encompasses the majority of the fairground, but there is land that's inside of city limits. Mm-hmm. And so we're going through and we've done some, draft version of this, and really focusing more on the hotel. I mean, we want that tourist commercial area to come in, tourist use to come in that, maybe complements the fairgrounds use, and then potentially even, engaging the fairgrounds in, potential use down the road and what that may look like. So this area is the airport. It contains the airport and some other parcels. And so we're working on that. That's a brand new zone to the, or comp plan designation. It'll be a new zone to the city. And so just want to make you aware that'll be one of the bigger changes. The next thing is in the very back of your packet in my section are an outline of the design standards that were moving forward with. And I believe that outline captured both when I early on took it to Planning Commission and City Council and got feedback, and that's when I basically asked the questions, do you want high, medium, low for design standards? A lot of it landed on medium, and how would you like those to look? And so I think we captured it with, we're going to have our very base design standards up front, and then any additional design standards for a jurisdiction, whether that be North Kelsey or downtown area, and kind of breaking those out into the subsets. And so that's the direction we're going to move forward with the consultant. We have a consultant that's going to be working heavily on this, and then we'll be bringing it back to Planning Commission for review. And we'll touch on those at a future joint meeting, but those are available in your packet. If you haven't seen them, you can kind of see the flavor of what we're going to. It may be dialed back a little bit. One thing that we're really focusing on with this is boiling down the language and trying to limit the number of pages. I don't know if it'll work or not, but I know I was told once a long time ago, you can't do anything, can't write a solid paper in one sitting, so we've been taking several sittings at it.
Sure. Can I make a comment about those uses? Sorry, simplifying the land uses for each zone, or that process? As far as the land use categories, what we're doing.
You're simplifying all of them?
Yeah.
Oh, the boiling down the definitions?
Yeah.
The land uses tables in all of the zones?
Yeah.
And so we're going through that.
Yeah.
Making it much more smaller and more
user-friendly. We're basing it on North American industry classification system so that we have something more standardized and simple. Which is about that fit, which we're trying to do that things like.
So our definitions aren't going to be like 3 inches thick.
Yeah, 800 pages, I think, is what they are. Okay.
I can't believe that. Sure, Tom?
Thank you. Well, we did learn when we were going through the charts that there are uses on there that are ancient. Like, we came across fix-it shops, and nobody knew what that meant. And within, there were 3 different kinds of beer definitions, but there was no micro distilleries. So we're trying to make categories that can evolve with the times without having to specifically say dock rumor. Well, what about a cat rumor? That's not allowed because we didn't identify it. Does that make sense? So mm-hmm. We want it to be a little easier to navigate. Thank you.
Yeah. And then just the last thing is timeline. So we have an aggressive timeline, and we're proposing to complete it by June and then have it to City Council. Again, it was aggressive due to current development that's taking place right now. It's pulling staff's time away from working on the UDR, so that may be extended out a little bit. Planning Commission started out at 3 Planning Commission meetings a month, and now we're up to 4 Planning Commission meetings a month, trying to keep this on track and going through. But again, they're dependent on staff making those corrections and getting those chapters back to them. So we are trying hard. The original goal was to hopefully have it through council by August, so we can avoid that budget season and not get caught up in that, because chances are we would be skipped over that and pushed out into January. And so we're still pushing forward with it, but it's looking like with our current development levels, it's getting pushed back.
All right, Commissioner Tuck.
And this will be my last thing. We're going forward based on the comp plan and the zones laid out in the comp plan. So if there are some of the areas did see some significant adjusting. So if there are, we really want feedback if there's any pet areas that the council is really concerned about, if you could let Ben know so that he can bring that to us and say that, you know, the council wants to see this prioritized or this work on ASAP, we want to accommodate that. And we were meeting twice a month, and now we're meeting almost every week, pretty much, so.
We agreed to 3.
Anyway, it's a lot.
We started with 2, we went to 3, and now we're at 4, so we're definitely taking
We love what we do.
Yeah, thank you.
Into consideration again.
We did with So, commissioners, on behalf of our community, thank you for all the work you're putting into this.
Thank you very much.
So, the last time this code was put together, I think parachute pants and mullets were in.
You can bring that back.
Yeah, right. So, I thank you all for doing something that is really important in our community. And it's not one of those things you get a gold medal for at the end of the day. It's not wise to run for office. But if we don't make these sorts of really what seems like the main things, it changes from we don't grow with the time, and it makes it harder for our folks to do work here and harder for people to want to invest in our community because of inconsistencies and everything. So thank you all very much for all the hard work you're doing.
Thank you.
I don't think any of us see it as mundane at all. So.
No.
I like it.
Thank you.
Would you like us to stay for the rest of the meeting, or?
Oh, no, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to up and leave.
Page 4, 5, and 6 are all related to overweight parking.
We ended the last meeting with that first item that was highlighted there in gray. It says consensus to move forward. All the rest of the items on that, those three pages, are just cleaning up the overweight parking item section of the code. So basically, it clarifies the definitions, actually has a process for how to get an overweight parking permit. Currently, the code just says you can apply for one because they actually have a process for doing it. And then clarifies where people with overweight parking permits can park. So that would be the question before the council would be to you is to proceed with those proceeding amendments to clean up the overweight parking section of the code.
Is there any objection to wanting to clean up the overweight parking section of the code? That's not a server.
No objection. Is there a place where this is prominent and is it a problem?
Yes, it has several times been that. People have tried to expand it to use, have businesses in residential areas. By saying, well, I'm just parking an overweight vehicle on my property. And then also the other one is just in enforcing that, we found that it's hard to enforce it because there really is no process. And there's also different weights of the vehicles and different sections of the code. So we made them all to be the 15,000 pounds. And then the other last one is just in reading it, if you were enforcing it uniformly, the empty dump trucks could not come back to City Hall to park here at night. So we added, so we put in the exemption for government and utility vehicles to allow that, so we could actually have our vehicles on this property.
Okay, so I don't hear any objections to making the recommended changes.
Okay.
Next item.
Page 7. I put on the digital page, it's a little easier to look at.
Okay.
Currently, state law says that when people park on the road, they have to leave 10 feet of the roadway available for moving vehicles. Mm-hmm. The fire department has asked that to be changed to 20 feet because they like more room, and also the standard fire apparatus access road is 20 feet. There's no, in their codes, there's no explanation of the 20 feet is 20 feet because that assumes that someone did park there, they can still get around that, or it has to be 20 feet clear at all times. Current state law requires 10. They've asked for 20 feet, and I think we just started talking about this in last time, that the if we made that blanket statement, then there would be lots of existing areas in the city that wouldn't be allowed to have parking. This is an issue because we just had two complaints from the people up in the farm talking about cars parked on both sides and wanting them to be removed in order to have easier access. They talked about people coming around corners, and if there's somebody in the middle of the road, because the stop lights have the two sides, concerns about having accidents on that. Currently, what we told them is our current standard is the state law, which says there's 10 feet left, and so that's what we have to leave it at. So that's something for to be considered by the council. The two questions is, or options, one is to adopt the recommended street widths, that if the street is less than 26 feet wide, there is no parking, and it's between 26 and 34 parking on one side, and 34 feet that is allowed on both sides. And if you would like, I can bring up the map again.
Yeah,
bring
the map up.
And so on this map, yeah.
Red would be streets with allow no parking. Orange would be one side, and green would be parking on both sides.
Can you make it
specifically? We just select the addresses too long.
Yeah.
Let's cut to the chase.
Where would you like it to be bigger at?
Browns.
Okay. Federal Drive.
Or And Brad, how would we enforce this?
Go break your leg in your Mercedes?
Not in the way.
Okay, stop.
Those are problems.
We do window and window and put foothills up there?
Yeah.
All right, Councilmember Hammer, you're up first, and then Councilmember Cutback and Councilmember Kim.
Thank you. This was that was one of my questions was where exactly. So it looks like that area on 169, where there's looks like a T.
169 here?
There, yeah. It cuts across 169. It looks like part of 169 there is too.
Okay, this here,
yeah.
Yeah, that would be no parking on either side there and one side up there.
What's the orange?
Orange is parking on one side.
Oh my goodness. This is a pretty major change that I would definitely not want to make. Well, we've had, what, two complaints?
Oh, we've had more than that. That's just two in the last week. The one before that, in January, there was the request from the fire department to get rid of parking on one side of Allison.
And if I can, the reason why this is before you is because it was brought up by the fire district. So, it's something that is a policy choice that we needed to bring before the council as it was brought up by the fire district.
Okay, so the fire district was only concerned about Allison? Or that's the only one they brought up?
No, that's the only the latest one they brought up. They would actually like the city council to adopt Appendix D of the International Fire Code, which basically has similar language to that, and all, which would then say no parking. But they want right. That adopted. So
when they brought up complaints, so they have been having this other conversation, which is the larger policy. Yeah. So it's not just Allison, it's okay. The larger policy.
So right now we're within state law?
Yes. And in fact, on case-by-case basis, especially in new plats with the narrower streets, we've actually, as the plat comes in, we said only parking on one side is a plat condition, as opposed to older plats, which aren't that way, like in here, you know, that wasn't brought up at the time, so people have moved in, had parking on both sides, and, yeah. You know, folks can't do that anymore.
Okay, so if we're in state law right now, I understand the fire department's concern, but we're within state law. So I don't feel like there's this huge pressing need to enact all these changes. I think if we announce to the public that this is something we're considering, I think this place would be pretty full. And we'd have to hear hours of testimony, people saying they won't be able to park in front of their house. So I appreciate the fire department's concern on Allison and maybe a couple other places. I really don't feel need to pursue this.
Anything further, Councilmember Hammer? Councilmember Cutback, and Councilmember Kent, and Councilmember Stumber, and Councilmember Davis, and Councilmember Cutback.
Brad, what's some of the gray area? You see where it's like gray?
Oh, that's private streets. Those are private streets.
Okay, so private streets.
Those are private, yeah.
And they don't have any requirement for the...
We don't have the data for those.
Okay.
And this is just our GIS from our street inventory.
Okay. So the fire department, fire district is requesting this. Have they documented incidents where they weren't able to get to a fire or rescue someone or EMTs weren't able to because of the parking?
No.
Okay. And then I have huge concerns over this, going to this model, similar to Councilmember Hanford. Because clearly, if we have people parking on both sides of the street, where are we going to suggest they park? Mm-hmm.
These are, this is residential areas, people need to get to their homes, they need to be at their homes, you need to be able to have family come over, and by going to this model, you're basically, you know, there's nowhere, we don't have an alternative, like we're creating parking lots residential areas where people can park to get them off the street, so without any other information or data that really shows this emergency or you know, severe you know, loss of life or something where it's pressing that we would need to change it, I would say that we're in state law and that we continue doing that.
So. Thank you, Councilor Kovac. Councilor McKim?
So could this be applied on a case-by-case basis as opposed to having a blanket? Well, this is how we're going to do it.
Well, that's the second option, is just someone brings that issue, you know, there's a, it would be up in the foothills, which is the latest one that they asked. There's too many. You know, is it this corner here is particularly, you know, hard to see, two people coming around and they're both in the center of the street, they might, so you can have a little bit of, you know, no parking on one side around the corner, something like that. So it's kind of case by case things, is actually how we do it now.
Okay, to roll back to the previous question. Just a point I want to make on. That's good. So the upper right hand corner, that area, is probably the quietest neighborhood in the city of Monroe. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you couldn't park your cars on the street at that point, I just, with the exception of just a humongous fire, I don't see any real issue they're going to have there. And as Councilmember Kovac said, if you really don't have information from the fire department on, pick a street, a particular street is having a particular problem, or there, I assume the fire chief can go out driving and see if there are areas of concern, we could address those. Having a blanket process, I mean, just like I said, that one neighborhood, I don't think would work. And then in the event of having decided you can park on one side of the street, which side? Your side? My side? So I think that would really...
Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Wednesday, Monday, Friday.
Well, you know, the other kind of thing is, friends' house, that's what they have to do. They have to switch sides. Anyway, so those are my comments.
Thank you. Councilor Davis?
No, you brought up a good point. It's, you know, the green is easy to do. The red is easy to do also, because it's just no parking, but that orange stone, what side are you going to be parking? You know, is it going to be one whole side, or is it, if I've got a car in front of my house, the guy across the street can't, which side, or if he gets there first, then I can't, or what? And then that's, I mean, it just, it's not really workable to do that. I don't see it. But the other thing is if we did something like this, I can see pitchforks and I don't see it as working.
No deal. Can we take a look at the farm? I'm just curious what part of it's like for what access is like.
It's a pretty coffee.
For some reason, that last time we printed it, and it showed up on some of the things. Basically, most of it would be parking on one side.
Okay. No. Except in a couple of areas.
Yeah.
Just enough green people.
Just enough pitchforks, right?
I'm hearing consensus from council that we're not going to proceed with this, and we'll get it on a case by case basis.
All right.
We'll go ahead and move on to the next one.
Court banquet.
What's that? Oh, we part of the court banquet.
Simply haven't been late. This is the last one.
Also, when the police department was reviewing the proposals, they came across that said there's several places in the code that say parking tickets shall go to the Evergreen District Court. And since we have our own court now, that probably should be changed. And the suggestion is rather than being specific and saying the Monroe Municipal Code, or actually say the staff over in Langley, something like the Court of Competent Jurisdiction or something like that. So in case we do move back, we don't have to change the court again.
Works for me.
Any objection to change?
All right. That was controversial.
So I think we're done with you.
You're done with me.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Foster. All right. Last one on the agenda.
Thank you, Brad.
You want the
discussion
item number 3, AB 18-039, proposed amendments to council rules of procedure regarding regular meetings / study session format. Ms. Atkins.
All right. This is your last item for tonight, and really this is just talking about looking at formally adopting this concept of study sessions and regular meetings that we've been trying out for the past, I think it's almost a year, maybe about midway through the year we started looking at that. So a little background on our municipal code. Our municipal code calls out 4 regular meetings every month, the first through 4th Tuesdays. And it also says that some may be designated as study sessions. So this change would not be a change to code. Our code already allows us to have different types of agendas. So in essence, this would just be creating 2 different categories of regular meetings. The one proposal, which is the way that we've been functioning, is to make the first and third Tuesdays of each month a business meeting for all action items, and it would make the second and fourth Tuesdays study sessions for discussion items. So it's basically what we've been doing for the past, at least I'm gonna say 8 months, maybe?
Roughly.
Yeah. So that's kind of the first change that we would look at proposing just to formalize the process. One thing that did come forward with the processing of ordinances specifically was right now your rules of procedure call out 2 readings of all ordinances. And so obviously that would space out the procedure for that whole process of passing an ordinance. So one idea for addressing that staff has come up with was to say that, okay, if you still want to be able to see these items at least twice before you approve them, perhaps you would do a rules amendment that would just contemplate that if something, that all ordinances come to a study session for discussion, and at that time the council could decide if it was ready to move forward for action, and if it could perhaps go on the consent agenda, go on a final action, but go on for a final reading, or if you needed more time. So it would kind of, you know, it would keep the process of at least 2 touches or 2 times that an ordinance came to council before being adopted, but it would also allow us to keep moving in the same kind of time frame that we have right now, which is 2 consecutive meetings in a row once an ordinance comes before you. So that's just an idea that we had with being able to keep our process being and our efficiency going.
I want to go through, is this the last change or are there additional changes?
There was just 1 more proposal.
I just wanted to, I'll make my comments after you make your final.
Okay.
I just had a question on that particular item. We can do that, but we could also decide that we want it to be longer between for a second reading. That doesn't take it away from us.
Oh, correct. Yep. Yeah, and I think when I actually show you a little bit later, and I think might be this is either the actual language or it's just kind of a summary of the language, but I believe it says, you know, you will have the opportunity at the study session to say, yes, we're ready, no, we're not.
Okay, because that reads, first reading shall be waived if the ordinance is presented for discussion at the study session. So that's saying shall be waived.
Yeah, and I think that later it does say, it says shall be deemed waived if the council consents to having it on the agenda, but we'll that's in a couple pages.
Okay.
So yeah, but certainly if we wanted to clarify that language a little bit,
my understanding was to kind of build it into the process, that that's what we would like to do, and that's kind of what we're hoping that we could do to be able to keep moving efficiently. But of course, if council's not ready, council's not ready, and that's the case now. I mean, of course, if you're not ready to take a vote or accept a first reading, it does get pushed out now.
Yeah, because I think there's some items that are, you know, really important to the community that even having 2 or 3 weeks in, we want to do that sometimes, just to give people longer time to comment between that first reading and second reading, which happens periodically, not as frequent, but... So I just would want the option that it isn't shall be waived, even if we discuss that study session and... You know, that the second that it comes to the business meeting, it isn't for sure then we're too far to waive it and just the second reading. That we still have that ability.
Yeah, and when we get to that, we'll make sure, I'll double check that to make sure that that language leaves that ability. And of course, your vote as well always leaves you that ability to, right, to move things out. If you're not ready, or even at the night of the vote, you can always decide to postpone something if new information comes to light. So, I mean, those are tools you already have available.
Right.
So you're never boxed into having to do it that way no matter what. This just kind of gives us another kind of a intentional tool.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes,
no, I'm... Is that the last presentation?
Oh, there's just one more. Okay. The last one was just something that had come up in conversation and looking at other cities, and it was the idea of what we call our commentary period. Ours currently is called Comments from Citizens, so we just went out and looked at some different names in case people were wanting to change that up and just make it a little bit different language. So we did kind of look at what a whole bunch of other cities had it called, and so the suggestion was maybe change it to public comments. Again, that's a suggestion, if you like that or not. So those are kind of the three that we have coming forward. And again, the alternatives tonight are to go ahead and say, yes, this all sounds good, I like all three, bring them back for action, and we'll bring it back to the February 20th meeting, or we can bring it back to March 6th, it's really up to you. Another alternative would to say, yes, I'm ready to do item one, item two, but not item three, and then we'll bring back whatever you like best. And then the third is just to say, we're not ready right now, or we want to think about it a little longer.
Thank you. Councilmember Kay.
Thank you. Okay, so items 1 and 3, I don't have a problem with those two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I understand correctly, you will, let's say there's new business on the floor, it's going to be presented at a study session, there's going to be a discussion, and then by consensus we say, okay, we're going to be ready to vote on it, so then we will have a vote the following week. That would be the normal process.
So, at a study session meeting, there would be no action, no final action. By consensus, you could say, like we do currently.
All right.
So there would be no difference than what you're doing right now. We're just formalizing it.
All right. So we've got a new issue tonight. We've discussed it. We think it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
That one happens.
We would schedule it for a business meeting with an actual formal action with a motion, and that's how we've been actually doing this.
That could be the next week. It could be further out if we decide to move it out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. If during discussion you've got a lot of other questions, but you're ready to take action at a meeting, staff needs to go back and do some more research to answer those questions, but you feel it's necessary to come back. We're ready to maybe take action on if you wanted some more information. Maybe it doesn't come back next week, but it comes back, you know, a couple weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
The flip side, you're ready to take action. Staff has the staff briefing put together for next week, and we bring it forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a good example would be tonight. Brad brought forward a whole bunch of code amendments, and now that you've kind of given him direction on the policy issues that he had questions on, he'll go create that ordinance, and that will come back to a business meeting for you to look at in an ordinance format, something that you would adopt, and then you would actually take, you know, action on it.
Yeah, you didn't see the product tonight. You saw what it was we were talking about, the concept that we want to make changes to. So,
okay, what's the problem we're trying to fix? I guess I'm not saying this is a bad idea, but I don't see why we would need to do it this
way. What, have study sessions or
no? This particular procedure where we're going to have an introduction to the study session. Now we don't have a vote. We would not have a vote on the ordinance changes. The first night,
mm-hmm.
but
next Tuesday
we would have the
the final. So I'm just a little bit confused on what is the problem, where's the slowdown, what are we trying to fix here?
By
going with option two.
Can you scroll back to option two? I just want to make sure I'm on the page, same page as Councilor Camp. So are you talking about waiving the first reading, or?
Well, essentially that's what you're doing. You're waiving the first reading. You're having a discussion, mm-hmm. and then there's no vote. But by consensus, a few head nods or something is going to be brought back.
For consideration to take action at a future meeting.
Right. So the way the process works right now, it's presented at our normal meeting, and we vote on the first reading, and then we wait a week or more weeks and have the second reading. Mm-hmm. So what's the problem? I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out. Why are we fixing it?
If I may.
Yeah, please.
What I get there is just to have the opportunity at the study session to have that deeper dive on certain items like RADs or these other code amendments coming forward, where you might want to have a little bit longer of a discussion. Uh-huh. And you might want to put aside a lot more time to do that before it hits an action agenda. And so then that way we can keep our action agendas a little bit more efficient by saying, when things are ready to come for action, they're ready. So you could still do it in the format that you're talking about, whereas if we had an item where we wanted to have it come for a first reading and a second reading at a business meeting, you could certainly still do that. This doesn't take away that option.
Right.
So for items that might want to come to study session to get that deeper dive, to get more information and to be more specific, because if you notice, we try to have only about 3 items on study session,
right.
Whereas on a packed night at a council meeting, you may not really get the time to really say, we really want to talk about this subject mm-hmm. for an hour and really dive into it. So, you know, it's kind of that, it just gives you another tool to be able to do something a little bit differently.
The only response that we really have for that is, I like the fail-safe method of having a first and final reading. But like you said, that example we had with Brad's presentation, there really is no need for a first and second reading on that because it's straightforward, we all understand it. And in general, I think everybody's in favor of it at this point. And I hate to give up that fail-safe option. So if we have like a presentation, a first reading, and then a second reading, which I guess would have to go off 2 additional weeks because you'd skip a study session.
Yeah, and so if this might help, this is the actual, at this point, the proposed language that kind of addressed the reading.
Okay.
And so the important part that I would say is that fail-safe is to say, provided that the council recommends the ordinance be placed on a business meeting for final reading and adoption.
Okay.
So at this meeting here, if, like you said, Brad's item tonight, you all feel really good, you're thinking, we do not need to see this another 3 weeks, you know, we're ready to vote on it as long as we see an ordinance that follows the discussion tonight.
Right.
So we would assume then, okay, you guys have all given that head nod to bring it back for final reading and adoption at the next regular business meeting. But if not, then we go ahead and we do the 2 reading.
And that's good. What I'm concerned about is if there's an issue that maybe has some public fervor, I don't know what it is, but we all look at it from a different perspective. I like the idea of whenever somebody waves a finger, I always stop.
Oh, sorry. Councilor Richard.
I'm sorry. When we, if the public has a fervor about it, that allows them to have that additional comment. So we have a discussion, a first reading, Facebook takes off, all the social medias go, the next thing we know, we have 50 people in here saying that they don't want to paint all the, paint all the sides purple this year or something. Mm-hmm. If we could have something like that, just some means of saying we are intentionally going to skip the first reading. I know we do it right now by just doing a vote, right, or a procedural change.
Any vote on the
wait versus reading? We do the wait. We do actually vote on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know how you put it together, but it's something along those lines. Just some sort of just a note that we are going to.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to have a vote to me, but I just want to be the last option.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, that's what, if I'm making my point.
Yeah, and I think, I will say, we're not changing the opportunities for public comment at this point. They'd still be at every meeting, so study session and at the business meeting, so public would still have the same amount of time to come and speak on it.
Right.
And then, of course, if you're just saying, let's be very, very clear in our agenda bills and in our materials that say, this is when we vetted it, you know, and we made that decision to waive first reading and to adopt on final and build that into the motions and things like that, we can certainly look at that too.
Right.
Let me ask one more question just for my verification.
Sure.
If the council in here has no objection to skipping first reading, it comes along for action 2 weeks later, a week or 3 weeks later, council decides that they actually want to have first reading and second reading, there's nothing that binds them at that meeting from saying, you know, we are okay with waiving first reading at the study session. We can see that there are these concerns that have come up. We are going to go ahead and we're going to talk about it tonight, and we are not going to waive first reading or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the important thing to remember about your rules of procedure is, and it's not included because these are just excerpts, but there is a fail-safe at the end of your rules of procedure that say if you all act as a body in a certain direction and you decide to take a certain action, nobody can come back and say, hey, you didn't follow up this. I mean, your votes are your votes, and what you decide to do is what you decide to do. So if you decide to vary, that's your prerogative, and as long as it's with a vote through the formal process, that's always something that you can do.
Okay. All right, Councilmember Kovac.
So I do like having a study session because I think it's helpful to take a deeper dive into topics. I think it's helpful for me to say to the public, like, who will not be taking action at that meeting, that I can give that definite answer, because people do want to know that. My question, and I appreciate so that makes sense to me, that we can, you know, just say, no, we're not going to put it on for final reading adoption. We're going to put it on for first reading.
Mm-hmm.
So I get all that. My question is, do we need two study sessions? do we need two? Could we have business meeting first, second, study session always on the third, and then a business meeting on the fourth, and then you don't even have the problem of having the ordinance is being approved and, you know, two new things. So I don't know what the need is. I like the study session format. I like the deeper dive. And I like actually being down here. So I like the difference. I think it creates a different kind of feel, community discussion when we're sitting down here. But is there a need for two study sessions tomorrow? And Councilmember Hanford showed me the list, and it looks like a lot of jurisdictions have one or not, you know, so it's all over, but so staff would know that better than I think.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my question to you. This has been presented, it's very uniform for the third, second, and
yeah,
but do we need it?
Ms. May?
In regards to whether or not we need it, I guess that really is a question of how frequently the council wants to talk about issues at a deeper level. I think we've been filling up the study sessions fairly well since we began taking this approach, and maybe that's something you want to just revisit at the end of the year and determine whether or not you felt like that was adequate, or whether or not you feel like just having the two study sessions and three business meetings seems more appropriate.
Will you yield for a question?
If I could just make, and then I'll be done. I mean, if you look at the agenda for next week with all the items that we have to, it's a big agenda. So I guess
but those items would have to wait then still, you know, another week off, and I'm not sure if I took a look at this, how many of those would want to wait.
Yeah, possibly that first, second business item, third is study session, fourth, and then you run into the first again, so you don't have the week off unless you have a fifth Tuesday, which happens once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Are we freeing up the study session for cramming in the business items? You know, I don't know. I mean, I looked at next week's agenda. It was pretty full. It's pretty full. So that would be my only question of that. So I'm done.
Just point of clarification. If the council, so we have the first and the third and the second and the fourth. If the council First, if we found that we had nothing for a study session, we could cancel the meeting. Second, council could go ahead and declare a special meeting and make it an action meeting on that fourth,
Absolutely. Yeah. So you don't, that is one piece that was brought up as well when I've been talking with Ms. Knight and Mayor Thomas, was to not forget that you always have the tool of having a special meeting, and that is 24 hours notice. And so even if there was a pending action item that needed to happen on a second or fourth meeting, you could certainly call a special meeting to address that action item so that you don't lose that tool by going in this direction.
So you tack it on in the beginning of a study session, or just in lieu of a study session, have a special meeting where you take action. And these are fluid. If we find that we're not using the two study sessions, we can always go back and revise the rules of procedure.
Yeah, I get the special meetings. I get that we can change that. It doesn't give public as much notice. You know, that's my only concern with having to do something like that. I like the right of, you know, the uniformity of, you know, this and this, so public gets used to that. They know we don't take action on those nights. So I like the study session. I was just wondering, as I look at full business meeting agenda, if it's absolutely needed. So yeah, that's all. I'm done.
No, you asked one question.
Oh, yeah.
One thing to note about next week too is it's a full consent agenda. I mean, there's a lot of consent items. If you took those out, you know, business items that you're going to actually have a presentation on and discussion on. That's about what we do on a normal basis, but yeah.
It's full, and you don't know at staff whether we will pull it. And so
absolutely.
That's, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes things change. I can tell you the last few weeks I get to a Friday and, you know, things aren't ready.
Yeah.
And sometimes that happens too, and I know that you all are aware of that. So sometimes we have a huge agenda on a Tuesday, and by Friday a few things aren't ready and it whittles down a little bit.
Sure.
Anything further, Councilor
Cook?
No.
Okay, Councilor
Sternberg. I'll try and make it short. If I understand what Jim's concern is that we had this is a kind of this session, and we want to go to Brad's next week. We looked at Brad's next week, and we said, nah, there's a little something else to check here. We couldn't vote on it the next week because it'd be one of these kind of sessions. Mm-hmm. So it'd have to go 2 weeks out. Mm-hmm. Now, all things are being implemented as special session, but it seems to me we're going from 255 Chevrolet to a Ferrari here. I mean, it's getting convoluted, and it's getting that there's two or three or four more steps, different kinds of meetings. And maybe we're just pushing ourselves into a corner we don't need to be in. I don't know. I mean, I'm okay with putting there everything. If we can do it in one reading, let's do it in one reading. If there's a concern about it in public and it takes two readings, do we really want to have to wait 3 weeks or 2 weeks? Or do we want to, as we put ourselves in that position, now we have to declare that next week this kind of session is a special meeting so we can vote on it? I don't care, yes. I just don't know if that's where we want to go.
I think that's kind of a TED is what I would say too. You know, we haven't had this. When was the last time they had a study session regular meeting format here?
2004. I was on council when we eliminated the study session. There was a desire to be able to act at every single meeting, and so two of the people in the room were part of voting to eliminate
the study sessions. I think they created more discussion and more depth. So,
Councilmember Sarver, almost every place I've worked, every place that I've worked that I can remember had study sessions, and it allows us to have a different conversation when we delve into things.
I agree.
I think it better informs the council about the decisions. It allows for conversation with staff where we're putting together things that are hopefully better for what you're looking for.
So I think it's just the restrictions. It's just the restrictions we seem to be putting on ourselves that this kind of meeting as opposed to the one we have next week. So
yeah. The issue beyond that to know. Councilor, the impact of switching to action meetings every week, from my recollection, was going from a place where it became the norm that every other meeting we went into depth on legislation to every meeting being an action meeting. And in some cases, the actions that were on the meeting were controversial
and made it so that nobody wanted to stay around at 9 or 10 o'clock at night to talk in depth about the, you know, about other things that really mattered. It was just a different mindset. You'd have the room packed for something, you'd make that decision, and by the time the discussion item came up to talk about, people were just kind of beat and you know, worn down. So I kind of like this format. But you know, at the end of the day, you have the ability to make changes. Anything further, Councilor Scarborough? All right, Councilor Hanford.
Thank you. Liz, can you rehash the rules for study sessions versus regular meetings? When you can take action, when you can't, things like that. It's in law.
Oh.
I'm not afraid of what we do, but just in
it's
what's
not,
legal.
It's not classified.
So we could take action right now.
Technically, tonight is a regular business meeting and a study session.
So then we changed it to the two and two format. And we can do a study session. Could we take action?
Yes, but we would have to put it on as an action item.
On the agenda.
Yeah.
So then what's wrong with leaving, say we did the two and two, what's wrong with leaving the first and second hearings the exact same way we do it, just put it on as an action item for the study session, the first reading, and then the next week at the business meeting is the final.
You could certainly go in that direction. I mean, one of the things that we were looking at from staff is just trying to limit the number of items that you're having on a study session night and not have to have this switch from at the dais to down below. So I think that, you know, kind of the idea was if we went to a full study session, we would really just be down below, just be down here the whole time. We wouldn't have that separation. We wouldn't kind of have that, you know, kind of like duality of a meeting. It would just be, we're just coming, we're sitting, we're hitting our discussion items, and we're moving on. If we needed to take action, we could certainly take, you know, make it work. So there's no law that says that we can't make changes. We still have tools to be able to get done what we need to get done. This was just more to also help staff kind of plan ahead. So if we know that you all are happy with this format, we can plan ahead to have things on the agendas, first and third for action, second and fourth for the meetings, then we got into these retreats. It also helps us put together our materials. So from a staff aspect, that's kind of a different view to consider as well. But it really does kind of allow you to focus the agenda on these nights and have that sit down and with a limited number of items.
So that kind of, you kind of went into my next question was, what is staff's opinion of this? Is it staff that's driving this? Like, who originated this idea? Is it you? Because, you, like you said, you worked on...
Well, no, actually, David Mosley, me, I believe that both Becky, who came from a different jurisdiction, I think Deborah, it's just something that we're accustomed to doing, is having the study session and then having the action. So as far as the rest of staff, I haven't interviewed myself, the rest of staff, but it... You know, it's something that David Mosley, one of the things he asked was, well, you know, this is one of the things he asked about, you know, first, when you do your visioning, and second, where is this, you know, where are these meetings, these study sessions? So there are just certain things that we since, you know, 2004 or so, kind of started doing things differently. And, yeah, it's different than other jurisdictions, and I think by us not being able to delve into things, like I think we miss out.
Okay.
So
staff is in favor of this.
I don't want to say that because Ms. Knight, do you have any read on the rest of staff?
I don't have a read on the rest of staff, but I know from my perspective, the fact that we limited the study sessions to a couple of items means that when we're preparing then agenda items for the action meeting, we actually have more time to prepare those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first jurisdiction that I've worked in where you actually meet all 4 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a lot of production time, truthfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just a lot of time that's spent just producing packet, which means that, you know, the other analysis and the other deliverables that we have to be worked into that agenda packet material. So it's great to have a break, truthfully, and let a couple of department directors that have deeper items
actually have the time and energy or to look into producing something that's helpful for you for discussion.
This guy was happy when I said that he didn't need beer. Take a look. That's a very good point. Take a look at the staff that we don't have here this evening, because it's a study session. We only bring the staff that needs to be here.
I'm seeing consensus from the staff members that are here.
Well, I process every packet, no matter what.
But at least the study session packets are smaller, right?
Okay.
So there's a little less production time put into those, because there's only a few items.
Okay. The other thing too, by having this in the rules of procedure, even though council might be able to make changes, it creates some discipline internally. I've seen where we would say, look, we're going to have a study, we're going to have the equivalent of a study session every other week, so we have a deep dive, and then over the course of that week, you have a staff member saying, well, do you think I can get this on? I'm going on vacation the following. Oh, do you think I can get this on because of X, Y, Z? Oh, I didn't plan well enough in advance, can I go ahead and kick it to the next meeting? And pretty soon your study sessions get eroded with action items. Some are controversial, some are not, but it eats away from your time to have a conversation.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes, my thoughts are, I like the study session format, and so I would be fine with the two and two to start with, and just see how it goes. If other council members, some haven't spoken yet, but I'm fine with Councilor Kovacs' idea too, with two and one, or three and one, or something like that. But I'm open to all that. The one thing that I really like is having the first and second meetings. And I have no problem if we're having a study session, still having an action item on the study session night with the first reading of this and voting here. If there's no law prohibiting us from doing that, then I don't see no reason why we should start out there for the one action item and then come down here. I don't see why we wouldn't just have our meeting here if that's what you're desiring, and then get the action item done with, and then continue on with the rest of the study session.
I'd like to just verify what I've said to make sure that that is correct and that there isn't some definition of study session that doesn't say that we cannot take action.
Sure.
Just to verify that.
Okay. So if for some reason that's not allowed, like study sessions, you're not allowed at all to conduct business, then I would rather have it keep the first and second readings intact. And if we're doing every other week, that shouldn't be that big of a problem. We've waived that requirement when the meeting is when it's been necessary, and staff has proven that there's really a need to waive it. So I don't see any reason to change the first and second rule. And then the public comment thing, I'm fine with.
Thanks. Thank you. Councilor McCann.
Thank you. If you don't mind, just the first and second readings and having them incorporated in the study session. I don't absolutely agree, because with the study session, there's less pressure on actually having to make a final decision. And I noticed when we're sitting up there and this has happened. I have walked into what I thought was going to be a discussion, and the next thing I know, somebody's made a motion. And you're scrambling, you're thinking that you're going to have a discussion, be able to present your case, and the mindset suddenly changes from let's get more information to let's make a final decision. So that's where I'm hesitant about having a first reading in the study session. I like the idea of having a first and second reading because, like I said, I like the feel safe. Mm-hmm. But when we're in this environment, I think it's better if we can just ask questions and work with each other and try to at least understand better and move forward.
Sure.
That's the only concern I have about having a first reading of a study session and then moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Okay, so is there an interest with the consensus that we want to keep the first reading? Do you want to be able to not have the first reading if it's heard in here?
I like what he is.
You prefer to have a first and a second in a regular session?
Well, I'm not making
okay. And so then that would mean that the council would have the ability,
if you've discussed something in here, you have the ability to go ahead and waive first reading if you thought that was a pretty straightforward thing in that action meeting, and then vote.
All right, there's a pressing need to do that.
Yeah. Okay. So what we'll do then is we'll go ahead and we'll change those according to what I understand is the vote of council by way of consensus here, and we'll keep the first and second reading, and council have the ability to waive the first year. All right. Anything further?
That's it.
Okay. I don't have confusing
ideas. Does anybody else have anything to put in the order this evening? Quick question on the rules of procedure. Do we need to do a formal adjournment? No, don't bring it back up. Are we going to do a formal adjournment for study sessions? If we're not taking action as a motion in action.
No, we don't have to.
Do we have to adjourn the regular study session?
Normally you can say without objection, we are adjourned.
I think the clerk would like us to have the motion night.
I am open, but you are technically in a business meeting.
No, we're still doing it right now. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead and motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Right. I have a motion to adjourn from Councilor McCubbin a second. And some discussion on the motion. Say no, all favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Abstentions? Motion passes. Other slides here on the right side. Thank you.
Okay.